We're going to open the Rules Committee for today, and we don't have a quorum yet, so we won't be working any bills, but we are going to have some public hearings. And our first public hearing we're going to open is the one we held over from last time, which is House Bill 3482. And we'll have a short explanation by our Administrator, Representative Glezio. If you want to come up, you can. You're welcome to sit while we go over the explanation.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Bill 3482 establishes Election Day, the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November of each even-numbered year, as a legal holiday in Oregon. ORS 187.010 currently provides 9 specific annual legal holidays in the state of Oregon in addition to each Sunday. The proposed measure would add 1 additional legal holiday to that list and makes conforming changes to other statutes addressing legal holidays.
And with that, Representative Glezio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Larry Glezio, House District 35. Appreciate the opportunity. First, let me start off by saying that, Representative Berger, this does not create a task force.
Thank you.
Representative Garrard, this says nothing about tobacco. Representative Reed, this probably had no impact on carbon, so it's carbon neutral, I think. Anyway, so I would imagine that the first time somebody said, we should have all vote by mail, there was laughter and chuckles. Are you kidding me? That's what a joke. Because when I first said, I think Election Day should be a holiday, I got much the same reaction. So what I'm hoping will happen is, perhaps not in this session, but maybe in the future, people would say, yeah, it actually made sense. So a couple things. Actually, let me just address the first, I think the most obvious question is, why would you make Election Day in Oregon a holiday? We have vote by mail. So my first response would be that election or holidays or a recognition is often, and votes are often symbolic. So number one is, I think just the symbolism of the day is it's a significant day. Even though we have that much time in terms of procedures to vote, we have a couple weeks, that is the day that is considered Election Day. The votes are counted and the consent of the government, the consent of the governed, the popular will, then comes from that. So I still think the day itself is a very significant day. Many would argue, and I would put myself in this camp, I think it's unusual that the United States is one of the few countries, advanced industrialized countries, that as a nation does not have either a holiday or have voting on a Sunday or a Saturday to make it more convenient. We cannot, in this body, make a change at the national level. So just as vote by mail seems to be pushing other states to take a good look at vote by mail as we see all the problems in elections, I think establishing an optional holiday, which this bill would do, it's an optional holiday, so it would be more like Columbus Day or St. Patrick's Day as opposed to, let's say, Christmas. That the states, as laboratories of democracy, would be making a statement, and Oregon would be at the forefront saying, we think Election Day is significant enough and it's important enough to say that this is as important as St. Patrick's Day, not to denigrate any of my Irish brethren, but I think Election Day is indeed significant. From a sort of a procedural aspect of this, and I think you should have, perhaps today still, contacted the Secretary of State's office, and if you look at the Oregon vote by mail turn-in trends, in other words, when people actually turn their ballots in, it's not a surprise, just on tax, this as it is on tax day, probably for different reasons, though, the last 2 days, the majority of the ballots are returned. And that's for a variety of reasons. It's not just procrastinating. People want to make their final decisions. So it's not as if people are voting, on the very first day. People do wait toward the end. Also, there are a lot of people who like vote by mail, but there are a lot of people who don't like it. They miss the symbolism of this a specific day where they got to go to the voting booth and go to the polls. And I think this bill would go some way toward addressing their concerns and the idea that this is a really important day It's what the, you know, a major part of democracy with a small d is voting in the franchise, and making it a holiday in Oregon would say we think it is that significant. So, again, in short, this would make it an optional holiday, so you don't have, small businesses would not have to abide by it. State government would not have to abide by it. It's an optional bank holiday. So at that level, you could argue it's more significant than everything, than anything else. But I would say that it is important enough, I meant to say symbolic. It's important enough, and we always talk about the vote being so important, and we honor it, and we honor our veterans for creating a country in which we can have an election day and a peaceful transfer of power. I think it sends a symbol, it sends a signal to our children, our young people, that voting in the franchise is very important. And so with that, I would say I'm open to any questions.
Any Representative Girard.
Representative, I want you to know that the offhand comments in regards to Representative Reed and myself did not go unnoticed. I'm curious as to when you will next come forth with making Italian the state language that we'll have to speak. When do I get the day off? When I mail my ballot? That means I can pick whatever day I want off?
Mr. Chair, Representative Girard, I would like to co-sponsor with you a bill that would make Italian the sister official language in Oregon. But no, it would be the date of the actual, well, it would be that final day. It wouldn't be contingent on you turning in your ballot. So it would be the final day. It would be the November 2nd, Tuesday, first Tuesday.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Glizio, I just wanted to be sure I understood that. I have a ballot that I need to return right now for school board elections and various things in Washington County. I couldn't leave now and go return that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reed, that would be completely probably up to the chair.
Okay.
But, again, I think the idea as much as, I mean, we look at it as a practical exercise, but it is very significant and it's an important day. And the symbolism, I think, is just as important as the logistics and the procedures of marking up a ballot. I think for those of us in here, we do it naturally and we pay attention to it, but I don't know that that's the case throughout the state, and I think it would send a strong signal that this body thinks that it's important.
So I have a question. Symbolically, I would expect, if we made it a state holiday, that government would want to honor that holiday just so the symbolism would be good, and therefore all of my county officials who are counting ballots would be off and it would no longer be the official election day because there would be no one to count the ballots or to pick up ballots if state sheriffs have to pick up ballots. And then would it be the next day that would be the holiday because no election ballots were counted on the day because they were all off?
Mr. Chair, thank you for that question. I'm sure there are people who have run campaigns where they wish that that would be the case and that the ballots would never be counted. But according to Legislative Council, I would quote from the first sentence that I got from Legislative Council, we do not think the bill would establish a paid holiday for government employees. I could furnish you with the letter, but again, this would be an optional bank holiday and it would not necessitate that county elections people take the day off.
But if I were, say, in an association or a union who thought it would be nice to make this a holiday so that I would at least get time and a half if I came in and worked hard on those days, would it not, by having it symbolically listed as a state holiday, be a pretty heavy idea that we should probably really look at considering it a holiday?
Mr. Chair, I can't speak for all unions. Certainly, I don't know if many unions are able to convince management in negotiations that they should get paid time and a half for St. Patrick's Day or Columbus Day. If they can, they're very powerful unions. But I think that's a legitimate concern. But my understanding from the interpretation of Legislative Council is because it's an option, they call it an optional bank holiday, that it would be difficult to make that case.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Representative Glezia. Thank you very
much. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
We had one other person to testify, so we'll do that. Georgette Brown.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Georgette Brown, former Josephine County Clerk, now representing the Oregon Clerks Association, and I have Jan Coleman with me, who is also a former county clerk. Okay, as Representative Galizio said, we are a vote-by-mail state. Other states who have considered this are polling place states. Voters have the opportunity to vote for the 2 weeks prior to Election Day, and Election Day is actually the last day to put in their ballots, but they've been voting. And a lot of people vote the very next day after they get their ballot. And then there's a little lull, and then there's a big flurry at the end. But people do vote right after they get their ballot, too. A lot of people do. And Oregon, by the way, has one of the largest voter turnouts. In Marion County, I've been told that every drop site would be closed if this is an official holiday. Many counties have drop sites in public libraries, so they would be closed if it's an official holiday. The official vote-by-mail manual, which is part of administrative rules and also part of ORS 254-470, states that on Election Day, drop sites must be open 8 hours or more until 8 p.m. In Josephine County, which is the county I come from, one of the outlying drop sites is in the city of Cave Junction in City Hall. If it were a state holiday, City Hall would be closed. Furthermore, the courts would be closed, and that would mean that not just paying off staff holiday pay, time and a half for the first 8 hours and double time after that, but also paying building operations staff holiday pay to open and close the buildings. In addition, the courthouse cannot be open without security, so a sheriff's deputy would have to be paid holiday pay for a minimum of 13 hours, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Many counties pay other departments, such as IT, sheriffs, and public works, for various services on Election Day. All of these people would have to be paid holiday pay. Because, in essence, it's not really a, would not be a bank holiday, it would be a state holiday, if the state chooses to do this. Everyone would have to pay holiday pay, and this would add up to thousands of dollars more than the high costs conducting a general election. So, in essence, the county clerks have reservations about the necessity of this bill and fear the obvious fiscal impact on the counties. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, you might know you'd get us up here today. Seeing as how, as county clerks, we're very supportive of vote by mail. Oh, I'm sorry.
Be sure and introduce yourself.
Sure. Jan Coleman with the Oregon Association of County Clerks. Just want to remind you that vote by mail passed by two-thirds of the electorate. One of the big things that led to that was that polling places were very expensive to run. If we did them on a holiday, and it would be extremely expensive. Actually, in my county, holiday pay to regular employees is double time. And so if they work overtime, it's double time and a half. So it just depends on the county, the union, et cetera. One thing we, Representative Galizio did refer to some of that in the bill. We picked up in Section 1, Subsection 3, that any act authorized, required, or permitted to be formed on a holiday, as you mentioned, Representative Roblin, is that they would be able to perform that act on the next day. And so we're wondering if that stretches us over to the day after the election to receive ballots and so forth. And while down in Section 3 and 4, it talks about holidays and optional holidays for the banking industry, domestic associations, and foreign and federal associations, that doesn't sound like us. So it looks to me like we would be affected by that.
Any questions for these two witnesses? Seeing none, thank you very much. So we're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 3482, and we're going to open a public hearing on H.R. 5. And Representative Call can come up while we have a short explanation.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. H.R. 5 honors former Governor Victor G. Atiyah for his achievements. Victor G. Atiyah, a native Oregonian, was the first elected governor of Arab descent in the United States. He served two terms as Oregon governor, serving from 1979 to 1987. In 2006, former Governor Atiyah co-chaired the Yes on 49 campaign, supporting 2006's ballot measure 49 with former governors Barbara Roberts and John Kitzhaber and current Governor Ted Kulongoski.
And with that, we'll have Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Representative Nick Call from House District 49. I'll be brief today. I just wanted to explain to folks the impetus behind this bill, or this resolution, I should say. This summer, after I won my election, one of the first people I called to come down and watch me get sworn in was Governor Atiyah. He's a member of my family, first cousin of my grandfather. They were very close friends for the entirety of my grandfather's life. In fact, probably my grandfather's closest friend. And when I telephoned him and said, I'd like to invite you down, he said, I've already got it on the calendar. And then I said, well, I'd like you to come down for the swearing in and not just for, then he cut me off and he said, I've already got it on the calendar. I'll see you that day, bright and early. And he said, I want you to know that 50 years ago to the day, January 12th, I was sworn in to my first term of office as state representative. And he said some very nice things to me about his legacy and moving forward in the way in which I should try to carry myself and act as a state representative. And around that time as well, it became pretty clear to me that this was our sesquicentennial year, and it really struck me that for fully one-third of the existence of our state, Governor Atiyah has played a very important and public role in service to our state. And so what I wanted to do here was to try to at least have the body, the legislature, where he began his career, honor that beginning and that lifetime of service. And that's what this bill is seeking to do, rather than this resolution. A couple things I'd just like to point out is that there are, in crafting the whereases in here, I wanted to make sure that there was a balance of things that both that people from all ideological spectrums could appreciate about this man, because in a very real sense, he represents a better time in our state where the best interests of Oregon and Oregonians was what came first. And his career, his legacy, is marked with things that Democrats may dislike and Republicans may dislike, but what were things that he believed were always in the best interests of Oregon. And that's what I'd hope that this resolution would represent. So the last thing I'd like to say is that Governor Atiyah's legacy is very, his public legacy is very well known, but privately he is also a good friend and supporter of the people that he cares about. And just one story I'd like to tell you that Governor Atiyah is a first governor of Arab American descent in the history of this country. When my grandfather immigrated from Syria with my father and grandmother in tow, they came to Detroit and planned almost immediately to return back to Syria, but wanted to come across to Oregon to say hello to some relatives. And the minute they got here, decided that they never, ever wanted to go anyplace else. And almost immediately, my grandfather found work cleaning rugs at his cousin's shop, Atiyah Brothers Carpets. And at every major step along the way in my grandfather's life, when he opened his own shop, at the birth of every child, at the opening of every business, and everything that he did, Governor Atiyah was somebody who was there for him to offer him wise counsel. And one of the saddest things that my family had to endure was soon after the second Gulf War started, the FBI decided that my grandfather was a person of interest and somebody that they would like to talk to. And true to his friendship and his word, when the FBI came to my grandfather's house to have a conversation, the person they met there was not just my grandfather, but was Governor Attia sitting by his side and letting him know that that their friendship knew no bounds and that he would be there for him in any situation. It was a particularly troubling time because my grandfather at that time was dying of cancer and on the downward slide. And I know personally that friendship meant more to him than just about anything. And it means a great deal to me that I can do some little bit to honor his legacy, and would just encourage everybody doing their best to be part of honoring his 50 years of service. So thank you.
Any questions? Yes, comment, yes.
Yeah, thank you for that story. It's almost more about your grandfather than the governor. My question to you, Representative Call, is what took you so long? It's May. Why didn't we see this a long time ago? Because certainly we should have thought of it.
I thought it would get thought of. I thought nobody was going to want to hear from me on this thing and that people would notice. And then a couple months into session, it became pretty clear that it was going to go unnoted. And so I was working to make sure that we could appropriately commemorate the day. And so it won't just be a House resolution. We have in the works to get him a piece of the old, the ceremonial office, a piece of the marble inscribed from the House to him. There will be an event at noon after the floor session, fully catered out on the newly renovated veranda outside the House Majority Office. And so it was really important to me that if it fell to me to commemorate his legacy, that I do it appropriately. And so it took me a little bit of time to get there, but have worked my staff very hard to do it. But now I think that at the very least, our House, you know, this 75th Legislative Assembly, will commemorate his 50 years of service appropriately.
Look forward to it.
Any other questions for this witness? You can stay there if you want. I think we're going to move to a work session.
Thank you.
If you want. We're going to close the public hearing on House Resolution 5. We're going to open a work session on House Resolution 5.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
Representative. I move Burr. House Resolution 5 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Berger moves House Resolution 5 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't react quite quickly enough before Representative Call left the dais. I just wanted to say thank you. In addition to Governor Attia being a member of Representative Call's family, I'm proud to be his state representative, so I'm honored to have a chance to be involved with the resolution as well. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments? Seeing none, we'll have the call of our committee. We can do a roll call.
Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Kelser?
Excused.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Excused.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Excused.
Chair Roblin?
Aye. Motion passes, and we'll see you on the floor. Would you like to carry this?
Yes, please.
We would love to have. We'll put Nick Call down to carry. And again, thank you for all of us for bringing it. So we're going to close our work session on H.R. 5. We're going to open a public hearing on
759, is what you would say.
Senate Bill 759. And we'll have, and just so people know, we generally have those representatives and others who are here, or senators in this case, first, so that they can get back to the other businesses they have, because everybody's running around. So that's why the order is kind of shifted. So with that, we'll have a short explanation by our administrator. And then we'll have our witnesses.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. Senate Bill 759 allows a Public Safety Coordinating Council to conduct business pursuant to a vote of the majority of the quorum present rather than a majority vote of the members of the council. ORS 423.560 current statute requires each county to have a local public safety coordinating council. The purpose of the council is to develop and recommend to the county board how best to use state resources for local offender populations, including the local offender population between the ages of 15 and 18 years of age. The council includes the local chief of police, sheriff of the county, the district attorney of the county, a circuit court judge, a public defender, a community corrections director, a county commissioner, a lay citizen, a member of the state police, a member of the Oregon Youth Authority, a city councilor or mayor, and a city manager or other city representative. Currently, ORS 423.560 does not speak directly to the question of whether a majority of the quorum can take action. Senate Bill 759 would address this issue.
Thank you. And with that, welcome to our little rules committee down here in the basement, Senator Starr.
Thank you very much. Appreciate being here. For the record, I'm Bruce Starr. I'm the state senator from District 15 in Western Washington County. I have the great privilege of representing Hillsborough, Cornelius, Forest Grove, North Plains, and Rock Creek in the Oregon Senate. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in favor of Senate Bill 759. It's a relatively simple bill, but it's an important one. There's a group of frustrated citizens in Washington County. They're the folks that comprise the Washington County Public Safety Coordinating Council. They've come to me and asked me to help solve a little problem that they have. As you know, these groups sometimes call lip syncs because it generally stands for Local Public Safety Coordinating Councils. As the administrator correctly indicated, most counties have these councils. They were created subsequent to Senate Bill 1145, which passed in 1995 special session, as a way to help coordinate policies set by those of us here in the legislature with the implementation at the local level. Along the way, the PSCCs were allowed to merge with local criminal justice advisory councils, and they're appointed by the presiding judge. So in my county, we have a very dedicated group of individuals, folks, involved in criminal justice and social services, along with about a half a dozen lay citizens. They're responsible for making recommendations to local board of commissioners. However, they sometimes can't do business because right now, under the law, that in order to do business, they need to have a majority of the council vote yes in favor of certain things. And sometimes they don't have that majority there. They get a quorum, and ultimately you need to have, in order to move policy suggestions forward, they end up having to have unanimous votes. This would fix that so that you basically have a majority of the quorum of the council as opposed to just a majority of the council. It's simple. With me is Mary Nunnenkamp. She's the chair of the Washington County PSCC. She can talk specifically to some of the frustrations that they've or she has experienced as the chair of the council in Washington County. In addition, Dawn Phillips is here today. She's a member of the PSCC in Washington County for nearly 7 years. She's worked with legislative council on this particular bill, has some additional background if it's necessary for the committee to hear from her as well. With that, Mr. Chair, I will be quiet. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and if there's any questions, be happy to answer them.
Well, we'll listen to both.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Mary Nunnenkamp. I live in unincorporated Washington County. I recently retired from the Washington County Sheriff's Office and the Washington County Commission on Children and Families, and I am here as a concerned citizen. I am not here representing the PSCC. Quite candidly, the senator is quite correct. We have 25 members of the PSCC. By statute, PSCCs have 12 to 15, but our Board of County Commissioners, and we believe it's a good idea, have increased our numbers by 10 more. So for us to get 25 people in the room at the same time, I suspect that you have some similar challenges as well. So what we'd like to be able to do is to have a majority rule of the quorum. For us, that's 12 members. But even if we have 12 people present and 11 vote yes and one votes no, or 11 vote no and one votes yes, by statute, we still don't have the majority. So we're hoping that you'll help us with our frustrations. We get to the point where we can't even get minutes approved. because of this lovely challenge we have. And frankly, we support the board adding the 10 additional members. It brings us much more diversity. We have 5 community members. I'm one of them, that bring a citizen perspective. So we're pleased with that. We just hope that you'll help us be able to get our business conducted. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Girard.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
Would this bill affect any other similar type committees around the state? In other words, we're not only changing the statute for you, but who else would we be affecting?
I believe that this would impact every public safety coordinating council in the state. It's we're changing state law, so it would impact all of the PSCCs.
It's right.
Representative. Yeah, my concern, and I think it's answered in the current statute, is that anytime you have a body who's making decisions based on just a majority present rather than a quorum, you worry about what decisions are going to be made. And if I can put on the record, it says that statutorily the local public safety coordinating council shall develop and recommend to the Board of Commissioners and coordinate local criminal justice policy. So it is not a policymaking body. It is a recommending body. And so I think I'm very comfortable with this, having that on the record, they are not making policy. They are recommending policy to an elected body.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not a question. If I may, it's a comment, and I could save it for a work session.
No, it would be great.
But this only makes sense to me. Some of the people that I read through in the statute here are busy people. Some of them, when I see people like a state policeman, I see people like a sheriff. And some of these things, it's very possible that their schedule may be interrupted by otherwise emergencies and may make it impossible for them to be there. And I do think the work of this particular group is very important. If you get the majority of the people who are in attendance, that's kind of really the way to run things, unless you're just trying to be super cautious. And I certainly would be very supportive of the, Senator Starr's and Representative Nathanson's bill here, and appreciate them bringing it forward because it just makes sense to me.
I guess what I will do then is thank you both for being here, and I don't see anybody else on the list. We'll close our public hearing on Senate Bill 759. I guess I'll ask right now, do we want people ready? Okay. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 759. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 759 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves Senate Bill 759 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, we'll have a roll call vote.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Representative Gelser.
Excused.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Nolan.
Excused.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Rowland?
Aye. Motion passes. And Representative Nathanson can carry the bill. Thank you. Okay. I think that takes care of all of our distinguished guests but one. And so we do have a representative in the building, so we will move next to that bill. That happens to be HJR 25. We're going to open a public hearing on HJR 25. Representative, you want to come up while we have an explanation?
Get these things in order.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. HJR 25 declares No Place Under the Sun Like Oregon to be the state song. It declares Oregon, My Oregon to be an historic state anthem. A. Buchanan of Astoria and Henry B. Murtaugh of Portland wrote Oregon, My Oregon in 1920, winning a statewide competition sponsored by the Society of Oregon Composers and gaining statewide recognition. That song became the official state song in 1927. No Place Under the Sun Like Oregon was written by singer-songwriter Linda Gravel of Redmond, Oregon in the 1970s while she was living in Nashville, Tennessee.
I'll let Representative Wisnett have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And committee members, the good news is I will not sing the song. It left when I got kicked out of the course in the second grade. It affected the rest of my life. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This is an important bill for me. It's because it's honoring a friend, Lindy Gravel, and a constituent. When Lindy asked us to look into this, we did a lot of research. We found many states have more than one song. The bill, and I'm here, Mr. Chair, to endorse -1, the bill with the -1. It was never our intent to do away with Oregon, My Oregon. It was to also recognize Linda Gravel's song as another official song. We found in our research that many states have more than one official song. Tennessee has 6 songs. Louisiana has 2. Arkansas has 3. Montana has 2. I just learned from Blue Oregon that that several there's other states. Washington State adopted Woody Guthrie's Roll On Columbia, Roll On is their official folk song, despite the fact that it was written on the Oregon side and paid for by the Bonneville Power Administration. So the point here, Mr. Chair, and I realize your schedule and how busy you are, and I appreciate you hearing this, is I think Oregon is a progressive state, and if we can't Mr. Watson, I don't think that he told the whole story about the selection of Oregon, My Oregon. It's my understanding that that song won by only one vote in the competition. So it was not a unanimous selection of Oregon, My Oregon. So, Mr. Chair and committee members, I think the progressive state of Oregon is ready to have more than one state song. And I'm not going to take any more of your time. I'm glad that Representative Edwards got here because I have a bunch of sworn statements from his constituents on this, wanting this song to be recognized. Now, we do because Mrs. Gravel performs all over, and she's done a great job. I can give you a lot of emails of people writing in supporting this, and she's got all these proclamations of wanting to recognize Oregon, her song, No Place Under the Sun Like Oregon, as another Oregon official song. Members of this committee, you know that we've done a lot of recognition and strange bills in this session, and there's nothing wrong with adding another song to the state of Oregon as an official song, not the official song, but a official song. Mrs. Gravel is prepared. We have a video we want to show you of the song, and I think I'll let, why don't I have Lindy come up, and I'll ask after her presentation, then we can ask questions.
We have 3 other people that would like to testify. Would you like to get them first?
I apologize. I'm Gene Wisnett, House District 53. I know.
We have 3 other people. Would you like them to testify before, or would you rather go do this part first? It's up to you.
See the song. Let the song sing.
Then we will invite Lindy Gravel.
I am Lindy Gravel, singer, songwriter, and
Oregonian,
native Oregonian. And I just wanted to say that this idea was not something that I came up with on my own. I was urged, since I've been back in Oregon since 2000, by fellow Oregonians and fans and people from other states as well, that this song deserves to be thought of as an Oregon state song. And I have nothing but the utmost respect for songwriters, including the ones who wrote Oregon, My Oregon, and would not want to take that honor away from them or their heirs. So with that in mind, I would just like you to consider the idea that this could be a second official song, and I would be most honored to give that gift to my beloved state. Thank you.
Oh, wait. Before we start that, Representative Jensen.
Thank you. I was going to ask, Mr. Chair, if maybe we could make Representative Wisnett an offer he wouldn't want to refuse regarding his first statement about singing the song.
I do not want that. I promise you.
We could have him sing along.
He will.
Yeah. Melinda was offended by that, I think. No.
Can you turn it up, please?
I was walking through her mountain, smelled her trees
Patrick.
Of evergreen. I've been across her deserts and waded in her streams. I've walked barefoot over beaches, built a castle in her sand.
I kind of want to put on the record in the spirit of Tom McCall that that video should not be shown outside of the boundaries of the state of Oregon.
How about that song? Thank you.
It was awesome. It was beautiful. So,
Mr. Chair, I just again I know the committee has a lot of important work, but again, I think in the spirit of progressivism and the fact that other states have more than one song, I would appreciate the committee considering this bill. Lindy is her comments show you how many she's saying, I want to give you this is my, we're not, she's not going to sell it. She wants to give this to Oregon. I do appreciate the committee's time and effort on this. And
you too.
We tried, I don't know if I've told Lindy, we tried to see if we could get it listed as the SESA Centennial Song, and we were not able to go to that amendment. So the amendment that you have is the dash one. It says it would be an official song of Oregon.
So I do want to acknowledge that there is no one more persistent than Representative Lisnett with respect to this. No one more persistent in getting this heard and getting this stuff. He has spent many hours coming to my office making sure that it's moving. So I want to give him a lot of credit for having spent the time. This is not an easy place to get things through, and we produce 4,000 or 5,000 bills and a few hundred get through. So it is a difficult place for things to happen, either quickly or at all. So it takes someone who's willing to steward it to get it this far, to get a hearing. Over half the bills don't get this far, so I want to encourage him and say thanks for that.
Thank you for those comments, Mr. Chair. We'll keep trying. We're going to work on the governor's wife and see if we can go in this. But,
we have three speakers.
And we have some other speakers would like
to. Would you like to say anything as well?
I think I said it all.
Yes, you did, so thank you.
Thank you very much for your time and attention.
So it looks like Jan is at Burks and Chuck Crickmore. I don't think I got that right. You can come on up. I think you've got three seats, and Dr. Scott Gibson. So all three of you are welcome to come on up. And with that, you may begin. Whoever wants to go first, be sure and remember to identify yourself. Thank you.
Yes. Well, Chairman of the Committee and members, I am Jan Burks from Independence, Oregon, and I'm here in support of the HJR 25, No Place Under the Sun Like Oregon. And in light of Oregon's 150th birthday, I think that an alternative contemporary song for Oregon is timely and refreshing. This song has all the elements needed for a state song. It is beautifully written, both lyrically and musically. It takes us on a journey through our imagination to every part of the state. It stirs us in the warmth, the strong emotions, and the pride we have as members of our Oregon communities. It reminds us that the expanse and diversity of the landscape of Oregon supports and honors many cultures of people and lifestyles. It is easily taught and easily learned. Last year, as principal of Independence Elementary School, I took the DVD of the song to a staff meeting and played it for my staff. They loved it. They said, "Wow, this is beautiful. We should teach this to our kids." So we did. We taught it the last 10 minutes of every PE class and in the classrooms for a few minutes at the end of the day. We often teach songs to our students through sign language because it engages them immediately and helps them to remember and to attach meaning to the words. They learned to sign it and sing it, and they loved it. The entire school, all students and all staff, plus many parents and community members, come together for the first 20 minutes of each school day to exercise and to celebrate pride in our school and our community. It was the perfect forum for practicing and signing this song. And Representative Berger has visited our school during that time. Right. Lindy came to our school and performed the song for our students, and they in turn signed it for her. It was exhilarating and very emotional for all of us to see 380 students so enthusiastic and so moved by this song. I believe that a contemporary song for Oregon will kindle the spirit of our children and youth and will help them attach to the legacy of our state. This song will do that for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Whichever next, yes.
I'm Chuck Rickmore from Redmond, retired citizen. The young man that spoke before about Governor Nitea and his grandfather, I think he said was from Syria or Turkey. I couldn't catch it back there. Anyway, he said he stopped off in Detroit and then came to Oregon and then didn't want to leave. Well, I came from Flint, Michigan, 60 miles from Detroit, and I don't want to leave Oregon either. In my 72 years, I've spent time in many places. Back in the mid-60s, and I'm glad to see some of you people up there probably remember this station, I was stationed at Adair Air Force Station in Corvallis. And that was my last duty station. And as I got out of the military and went into education, I spent 33 years in education in numerous places. Now it's time to retire, and where do I want to retire? I want to retire in Oregon. And I have to look at Lindy's last verse. I have traveled many places, and I felt the need to roam, but Oregon keeps telling me she'll always be my home. I love music. I love songwriters and singers. One of my favorite writers and singers is Willie Nelson, the country singer. And he wrote a great song about cowboys being special. Lindy's written a great song about Oregon being special. And as you see on the video, or if when you listen to the words or read the words, it's just amazing. When we retired down here, my wife and I, and the first time we went to hear Lindy, and she played this song, I was just amazed by it. Anytime we have visitors that come to Central Oregon, we take them to hear Lindy and request this song, and they love it. I would just like to say, I hopefully request that you grant this song the special recognition that it deserves. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Scott Gibson. I'm an internist from McMinnville. I was born in McMinnville, raised in McMinnville, and I've been practicing medicine in McMinnville now for the last 20 years. I'm also a landscape photographer, and for the last 10 years I've been publishing the Splendor of Oregon calendars, and we've sold about 80,000 of those. So I know Oregon intimately from my days of backpacking as a youth to going all over the state. I dare say that I probably have been to more little corners of the state than anyone in this room in my photographic travels. And I'm interested, I appreciate your giving me the chance to speak. I'd like to ask the members of the committee something. How many here could recite one of the verses of the Oregon State song by heart? Anybody?
Blessed by the blood of martyrs.
Oh, you got it. Okay. Well, there's one.
I can do the same.
Yeah, I think we all have that one. I don't know.
I can do the same. And I have to say that I'm going to take a little different tack. As much as I love Lindy's song, and it is absolutely deserving of being the state song, I really think that it is time for us to change from Oregon, My Oregon. It was probably okay in its time, but honest to goodness, the tune is not that great. It sounds like John Philip Sousa on Quaaludes. And, you know, a lot of the verses are just a little uncomfortable to sing, you know, upward. And, well, for one thing that bothers me is that the rhyming really is a problem. Upward and onward ever, onward and on. And on, hail to thee, land of promise, my Oregon. Okay, I mean, we've been trying so long to get people back east to pronounce the name of our state right. We've got a state song that rhymes with on. You know, that's a problem. So I appreciate the fact that Lindy was wise enough to make sure that it was things like sun and one that really rhyme with Oregon. The song that we have right now is not popular. I checked with some of my employees this morning. Nobody knew it. A couple of them didn't even know that we had a state song. And when I sang it to them, they were like, yeah, that's it. That's our state song. You know, it's not very impressive. People don't want to sing it. You know, that's why people don't sing it. It's not a really attractive song. We should have a song that little kids in schools, like she's saying, are eager to sing. And I know that you guys in the legislature have got very big issues in a time of economic distress to deal with. The budget, you know, economics, big problems. But this is an important issue, too, because symbols matter. Symbols matter in this world, and that's what this song is. This is a symbol, and this is a symbol that you can sing to yourself, carry with you. It's a song that little kids can memorize. I've got Oregon, My Oregon stuck in my head for the rest of my life because they made me learn it when I was a kid. You know, it's like the Gilligan's Island theme song. I'd like to get rid of it, but it's there forever. You know, I would much rather see our children learning No Place Under the Sun like Oregon and carrying that around with them for the rest of their lives, you know? That's the sort of song that if you learn that as a child, you memorize that song, and it's there forever, you can be glad it's there forever. You can be glad that your second grade teacher made you learn it. Not Oregon, My Oregon. Honest to goodness. I don't think they even teach it very much in grade schools. My kids didn't learn it in grade school, you know, and I think they've kind of given up because there's a general recognition that the song is antiquated, you know, and it really is time for us to start a new day in a very important symbol of our state. And Lindy Gravel has written an absolutely fantastic song. I don't think I have to sell you on that. The song speaks for itself. So I would just encourage you to really become evangelists for this song, to send it on to the House and Senate, and then back it up enthusiastically, because it deserves your support, and it's the sort of thing that can really be meaningful for a lot of Oregonians, especially our kids. Thanks.
Thank you all. Any questions? Representative Girard.
First of all, thank you for saying what many of us have thought for a long time. And I was at Keno passing you Height Finder information at a dare about the same time you were there. So thank you all for coming.
Representative Berger.
I have to say that I have been to Independence Elementary and watch the kids start every day with this incredible, enthusiastic time together. It is stunning, and happy to be back at some point and dance with those kids, exercise with them. It's a fabulous thing, and I can see this song signing them.
And just for the record, I know that my wife, also an elementary principal in Coos Bay, those kids do learn our Oregon song. It is difficult, but it is the state song, and she feels it an obligation as a principal to go through the different state symbols. So I agree with you completely on the state symbol thing. I think it is important, and we've added a few in the last few years, from our state fossil to our
crestacean.
State crestacean.
You could add our current state song to as one of the state fossils at this point.
And thank you all for yours.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. We're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 23. Which one was it?
That was HJR.
Okay, that was HJR 25. I'm going to close that hearing. And again, just so people know, I take very seriously the idea that it takes 31, 16, and 1 for bills to make it through here, and that means we've got to have the others. So I don't push things out that I don't think we can get to those places. So that's another part of the issue. And I know that Representative Wisnett is working really hard on those other issues, but it is one that we will continue to work on before we have a work session on this bill, just so you know where we're at. With that, we have a couple work sessions that I would like to do. The first one, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2352. And we'll have a short explanation. And then I've got a couple motions. So.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Bill 2352 requires the preparation of racial and ethnic impact statements. We've this bill has been before you before, and I won't go over the requirements of the original bill. I would speak, however, to the amendments that we've got.
Go with the dash threes right now.
Okay. The dash three amends the original version of House Bill 2352 by adding provisions concerning the effect of legislation on the victims of crime who are members of racial and ethnic groups for which data are available. It requires racial and ethnic impact statements for legislation to include information on victims of crime, directs the State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision to prepare and consider a racial and ethnic impact statement describing the effects of its rules on crime victims, as well as persons subject to parole or post-prison supervision. It adds a requirement for the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission to prepare an estimate of the effect the proposed legislation would have on preventing crimes against members of racial and ethnic groups for which data are available.
Thank you very much. On the threes, we do not have a the fiscal or the other. So we will eventually, if we decide to go this way and send it to Ways and Means, which I hope we can do, we will have to suspend the rules to let that happen. But it is going to Ways and Means, and that's their job to check those things out. We kind of have an expectation. So with that, I would entertain a motion for the dash threes.
Dash threes?
That's one.
Threes.
Threes.
Yes.
Dash three.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move that the rules be suspended. I move that the dash three. I move that we adopt the dash three amendments to House Bill 2352.
Dated
5409.
Representative Berger moves that to adopt House Bill 2352-3 amendments. Is there any discussion? And it really, what this does is it puts victims in clearly, and I think the language is very clear about that. Seeing no objection, is there any objections to the addition? Seeing none, so ordered. Now we can go with Representative Berger.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2352.
As amended.
As amended, without the fiscal revenue impact statements being available for review.
Okay. Representative Berger has moved the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 352 as amended, without the fiscal and revenue impact statements being available for review. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Oh, yes. Representative Girard.
Mr. Chair, I really don't.
Oh, it's, it's undebatable.
It's undebatable.
Sorry about that.
And you need a two-thirds vote.
It's undebatable. I appreciate it. I was corrected.
Pretty well shuts me up.
That does. Sorry about that. We'll let you afterwards if you just say if this passes. So, is there any opposition to suspending the rules? Seeing none, rules are suspended. Now I'll hear a motion and you can make a comment.
Well, that's all right. Now it doesn't make any difference.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2352 as amended to the floor without recommendation.
Okay, that's right.
And the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. You got that right, and I was overruled myself. Representative Berger moves that the House Bill 2352 be referred pass to the floor without recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
For the record, is that House Bill 2352 as amended?
Yes.
As amended. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm willing to support the motion, given that it's without recommendation. I do have some concerns about the bill as it's written. Certainly support the intent. But I do have some concerns, so I'm willing to support the motion without recommendation. I reserve my own right to perhaps oppose the bill should it reach the floor.
Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to join Representative Reed with those reservations. I, too, will give it a courtesy yes today to move it from committee, but I also have some reservations.
Yeah, it's approved. I have some that you can add to subsequent referral.
And for the record, I will put on that we did ask Speaker Hunt that we could add the Ways and Means referral. He did agree with that, and I do believe that the bill as written will have a significant cost physical. So I think it is the right place for it to go. I think we've done the things correctly, and I appreciate those votes. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I would join my two colleagues. I think it's not necessary in light of the fact we're sending it with no recommendation to make any sort of statement about not committing to any kind of vote in the Ways and Means on it, but whether it's necessary or not, I think for the record I would like to so indicate that.
I appreciate that. Any other discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Excused.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Excused.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roble?
Aye. Motion passes, and it's on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you very much for that. Next, we have
41.
Do you want to call? I'm not sure I'm out of people. Let's take a short recess for a second because I need to check and see if Representative Nolan wants to be here.
Did you close that?
Oh, thank you. We'll close our work session on House Bill 2539. Thank you. explain the dash threes, I believe it is.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Bill 2941 requires the Attorney General to provide identical ballot, draft ballot titles for state measures if the Attorney General determines that the subject, purpose, and major effect of two or more state measures are substantially similar. It eliminates the current requirement in ORS 250.035 that ballot titles not resemble any title previously filed for a measure to be submitted at that election. You previously had a dash two amendment that clarified or attempted to clarify the obligation to provide identical titles that apply only to two or more state initiative measures submitted at the same election. Proposed dash three is an alternative to the proposed dash two. It changes the requirement to provide identical draft ballot titles from situations where the measures are substantially identical, which is the wording in dash two, to situations where measures are substantively identical.
Okay. With that, I did invite
Tim Hughes.
Tim up to Tim Hughes to give an explanation and the reasoning for that. We did pass the twos before, so we'll have to make it state for the record if we decide to go with the threes that they replace the dash twos. So, with that.
Thank you, Chair Roble and members of the committee. My name is Tim Hughes, and I'm a legislative assistant to State Representative Chris Garrett, who represents House District 38. Representative Garrett is the chief sponsor of House Bill 2941. As introduced, the bill aims to curtail the costly practice of ballot title shopping by requiring the Attorney General to provide the same ballot title for two or more state initiative measures that he deems to be, quote, substantially similar. The committee first heard this bill on March 30th, and the committee held a work session on April 22nd. During that work session, the committee voted to adopt the Dash 2 amendment to the bill. That amendment narrows the scope of the bill so that the Attorney General is only required to provide the same ballot title for two or more initiative measures in the same election cycle. As you will recall from the bill's first public hearing, Andrea Meyer of the ACLU of Oregon suggested that amendment. Today, you have before you the proposed Dash 3 amendment to the bill. This amendment contains the same change that was made by the Dash 2 and makes one important additional change. You will notice that the introduced bill requires that the same ballot title be provided to bills that are, quote, substantially similar. In an effort to make the bill clearer and to provide more guidance to the Attorney General's office, the Dash 3 amendment replaces the words substantially similar with the words substantively identical. Representative Garrett asks that you consider this amendment because he believes it provides a clearer, more precise standard than the one used in the introduced version of the bill. Thank you very much for your consideration of this bill and its Dash 3 amendment.
Any questions?
No, but I'd like a few minutes recess, if you don't mind.
Okay, let's take a short recess again. Thank you.
Sorry.
No problem. So we'll go on a short recess. session. So thank you very much for your indulgences today. And now we're back to House Bill. We're in a work session on House Bill 2941. So with that, I will entertain a motion. We have amended it with the dash two amendments. We're going to stay there. So, do you want to, or you want to do it?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2941
as amended
to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 2941 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call. Oh, yes.
Bill should pass.
Okay. We'll have a roll call vote.
Representative Gerard?
Excused.
Representative Gelser?
Excused.
Representative Jensen?
Excused.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Rowland?
Aye.
Motion passes. Who would like to carry this bill?
I think Representative Garrett would like to carry this bill.
I agree. I will have Representative Garrett carry the bill. We are going to hold, I'll close the work session on 2941. And SCR 8, we're going to hold over. Is there anyone here to testify for that bill? I don't see anyone. And so we'll hold that over. And with that, all of our business for rules is complete. We do have pretty tight schedules.
Two reconsiderations.
I did want to mention that. We had two bills that we sent out, one to Ways and Means, and we had actually gotten a letter a week or two before from the Speaker taking the Ways and Means referral off because they had changed it to make no. And so we're going to reconsider those. It'll take a suspension of the rules. That one has to do with the
radio data
thing that went east.
Yeah.
And we kept thinking it didn't cost anything. We're actually going to save money. Pardon? Yeah, well, we expect everybody here. We're going to do this next on Wednesday, just getting a heads up. And then the other one was one in which our records indicated it had a subsequent referral. When it got to the desk, they didn't have that, so there was a miscommunication somewhere. So we're reconsidering it and sending it to the floor as well. And that one was the bill on
2511 had a referral.
Oh, it did have?
But we don't need a referral because there's no fiscal impact.
Right.
And you voted it out, so we need to refer it to the mission.
Right, we need to refer it out. Okay. With that, we will close our hearings and our committee on rules. Thank you all for being here.